Hello everybody, and welcome to Galactic Yo-Yo. I'm your host, Molly Martian. I'm just leaving the pub, having hosted my weekly pub quiz. It was a quiet one tonight, which, to be honest, I kind of needed. I've also just put my hand in my pocket and discovered that I have almost a full bar of family size Oreo dairy milk chocolate that I forgot I had. So I'm having a good Sunday night. But this week on the podcast, yes, coming a little bit later this week. You know how I'm a bit loosey-goosey with my schedule. This week on the podcast, I am sharing a conversation I had with a wonderful stand-up comedian called Lily Webb, who I met on the circuit a few months back. I noticed they had a Doctor Who tattoo. And when I was thinking for guests for this batch of podcasts, I thought, oh, maybe I could speak to Lily, because they're a very funny person, a very lovely person, and I knew they were a Doctor Who fan, so I was excited to hear what kind of Doctor Who fan they were. Sorry, an ambulance just went by. I am currently on the longest high road in Europe, so it's a little hectic. But no, I had Lily come to my house. We had a lovely fish dinner that we talk about at the start of the podcast. And then I spoke to them about their journey with Doctor Who. They told me a few stories in their life that involved Doctor Who, which I loved. And then we talked about Doctor Who tattoos, because we both have them. And then we got onto talking about when stand-up comedians have appeared in Doctor Who. It was a lovely and funny conversation. Change of pace from last week. Obviously, last week was also a lovely conversation, but a little more intense. So this is a more laid-back episode. And I hope you enjoy it. I'm going to stop yapping now, and I'll see you very soon. Please enjoy my conversation with Lily Webb.
It seems that I'm some kind of a galactic yo-yo.
Lily and I have just eaten some fish.
Yes.
Was it okay?
It was great.
Thank you. The broccoli was extremely undercooked.
That's okay.
But the potatoes, I felt I'd done pretty well. I don't cook potatoes often. The fish, again, my fish, I'd kind of butchered in the... It tasted fine, but I've been tending to it with a spatula in the pan, and when I've been flipping it over, it was kind of falling apart, and it looked like a bit of a dog's dinner on my plate, but I made sure that you had the intact, beautiful fish.
Oh, thank you.
And I've done the same thing. You've got the pristine microphone as
Do
well.
Do I actually? Yeah. Oh, I'm just getting the best service here, genuinely.
You truly are. I'll turn your gain down a little bit, because you have a loud voice.
I do. I've got quite a loud register.
Yes. So, Lily and I don't know each other super well. We were discussing just 15 or 20 minutes ago about how we were explaining to my housemates that the level to which we know each other is, if I saw you in the street, I would wave, but I wouldn't necessarily stop for a chat.
Yeah, and I agreed. Yeah. But that's kind of normal with, people on the comedy circuit.
For sure.
There are some people that you see loads and then you kind of become friends and then you're genuine friends and then you hang out.
Yeah.
And then there are other people that are we're friends and we like each other, but we don't see each other like that.
Yeah. So what you've alluded to there is that we know each other through the comedy circuit. And you meet a lot of people on the comedy circuit, don't you?
Oh, hundreds.
Some that you would rather avoid.
Yes, definitely.
And it's funny how some of the open mics attract freaks more than others, don't they?
Yes, and there are like some where they feel emboldened,
right,
more than others.
What, can you elaborate on that? I'm interested in that.
So like there are some where the environment is like, don't say HDH, you know, like.
Okay,
and
saying.
Then there are others where it's like, if you want to say hate speech, we won't stop you. That's
yeah.
our vibe.
I mean, I've met you at like some of the more queer focused
yes.
comedy nights, which is always, I mean, ostensibly should be a bit safer.
Oh, it is safer.
Yes, that's
usually.
Good. Okay, I'm glad that you feel like that too.
Yeah, I find comedy queer comedy gigs to kind of be the place where you can be queer.
Yeah.
And be fine with it. Or like you can be fine with it anywhere, but other people are fine
for
with
sure.
it.
For sure. Sometimes though, it is more challenging as a, like a queer comedian in a queer space, because in a like non-queer space where maybe people aren't so used to like meeting trans women, I find that my cheap jokes about my dick are like easy, like they go down
oh,
better
they love it.
Because
yeah.
they because that's like even referencing that I've got a penis that I don't want is funny to them, whereas like I hate to patronize straight people, but yeah, it's funny. Whereas in a queer venue, it's like, you know, it's a regular Wednesday, right?
Like we know that's, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like
yeah,
it's the same thing. Like I've done so
unlike every Labour MP under the Starmer leadership, we are able to acknowledge that women can have penises.
Yeah, but I would also say that as well, like it's funny because I've done queer night, obviously, because I'm a big homosexual, and I've also done disability nights.
Yeah, right? Of course.
And the reaction is funny because exactly what you said is like the reaction to my cerebral palsy is like less, they don't laugh as much because they're like, yeah, and like five other people in this room, right?
Yeah.
It's the same at like queer nights because
for
they're
sure.
like. But to be fair, I find that if it's like a particularly good joke, it will cut through.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if it's just like a cutaway, like,
yeah.
kind of almost like filler joke, they're like, eh.
I fully agree with you, actually. But we're not here to talk
no.
about comedy.
No.
We're here to talk about, I need to, because last episode, I got this girl and we spoke about, is the doctor autistic, right? It was the right. topic. And we spent, I would say, between 2/3 and 3/4 of the episode just talking about autism and forgot to mention Doctor Who. So we're not going to do that today.
No.
I noticed you're a Doctor Who fan because you have a Doctor Who tattoo and I clocked it on a gig.
Yeah.
Could you tell me how you got into Doctor Who, what your story is with Doctor Who, why you love Doctor Who?
So I must have been 4 or 5. I mean, the Eccleston era was 2005. I was 4, so yeah, probably around about then. I was probably about 4, and it was just kind of like my brother loved it, I loved it, it was on TV, we were both big nerds, we were like, yeah, we were both like losers, so we were like, woo, even at like 4.
Is he your twin brother?
He's my twin brother.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've seen him on Instagram.
And yeah, me and my twin brother, we're like besties, but yeah, so we both like got into it together, and then for me, he kind of dipped in and out as he got older.
Yeah.
Right? So like as he turned into like a teenage boy, he was kind of like dipping in and out of it, right? Because obviously he like wanted to be like cool and down mm-hmm. the kids. But also like there were, yeah, he just kind of dipped in and out. Whereas I stuck with it. I was like obsessed. I would like watch, like back in the day when I was like 7 or 8, I would have to come home and watch the same 3 episodes of Doctor Who every single day.
What 3 were they?
They were Silence in the Library.
Okay.
Turn Left.
Sure.
And Journey's End.
Okay, so all series 4.
So all series 4. I'm a big series 4 fan.
So how old would you have been when series 4 aired? About that age, about 7 or 8?
2009, 2008, that kind of was, wasn't it? Yes,
yeah,
so I was about seven or eight, yeah.
Okay, right.
Well, no, I was 7. 2008, I was 7.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doctor Who wasn't even on when I was 7. We were still in the wilderness years.
You were in the dark ages.
Oh.
But, yeah, so that's number one when my parents knew I had OCD, and number two, knew that I loved Doctor Who.
Why? What grabbed you about it?
I think for me, I think for me at first it was like, this guy's corny, like knows lots of stuff and like sick guy, right? And then like as I kind of got older, especially like so pivotally, like when I was about 16 and kind of like being like, I don't know, I gender is a weird thing. Jodie Whittaker then like came onto the scene and I was like, whoa. But also I think before that it was like this aloof guy who's kind of like socially awkward and like is kind of trying to be around other people and have them like him, even though he's like probably like the coolest guy in the world.
Like in terms of the queer angle, Doctor Who's always appealed to queer people.
Yes.
For all kinds of reasons. I mean, is it full of queer characters? It had more queer characters in it in 2005 than other shows did.
I would definitely agree.
It's got that camp energy. It's not got that level of traditional masculinity that a lot of other sci-fi stuff has got.
Yeah, in terms of the Doctor's fine to like play around with gender roles and stuff.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably, I mean, it's oversimplifying it, but it's probably a few of the reasons why as queer people
similar
we get
to like
attracted
yeah
to it. Yeah.
Most kind of, I feel like most queer people have a similar kind of answer of like,
yeah, I think
the
so.
The same sort of things. And I think also for me as well, like as a kid, because I didn't have like loads and loads of friends growing up, right? So as a kid, it was the concept of this guy, like no matter how you are, or who you are, or whatever, as long as you are like surface level, a good person, he will still have like time for you and be nice to you. Do you know what I mean?
And even if you're like ordinary,
yes, but he likes that you're ordinary as well.
He likes
that you're just like a normal person
for sure. And he's non-judgmental.
Mm.
Cool. So you get a bit older. You're still into Doctor Who.
Mm.
In the Capaldi years and the particularly the Whittaker years, where the public opinion of Doctor Who dipped a little bit. What made you stick with it?
So I think for me, it was almost like, okay, yeah, like there were elements of it that I hated. Like I wasn't in love with particularly either era, but it's like this is a thing that has like followed me through my whole life. So whether it's shit, mediocre, amazing, I'm still gonna sit there
this
and
is
be like,
me. I'm always gonna watch it. It doesn't matter.
Like, they could like literally just put her like a Dalek like rolling around on screen for like an hour.
You were
going to
say shitting, weren't you?
Yeah. I was going to say shitting.
I mean, they sort of did in The Magician's Apprentice, which is familiar. They, like, swim around in Dalek shit, don't they?
But, like, and then, to be fair, like, as well with the Whittaker era and the Capaldi era, there were such stinkers. Like, I won't even lie.
Yeah, particularly, I mean, for me, the Capaldi eras and the Whittaker eras are night and day.
Yeah,
in terms of quality. But I'm willing to accept that in the eyes of the public, the dip was that it wasn't like a cliff edge when Whittaker happened.
It was a slow decline,
wasn't it?
Yeah, I think as well, like both me and my twin brother are like into Who, and my brother has like dipped in and out and like came back a bit for the Capaldi era. Absolutely would not come back for the Whittaker era.
Really?
He would like watch.
Does he hate women?
Well, no, he hates Chris Chibnall.
Okay, fine.
And I would make him, I'd be like, no, just give it a try. And I would use the same thing, being like, are you sexist? Like,
do you
hate women? Like, if you don't watch this episode, you're a sexist.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, no, it's like got nothing to do with the fact that she's a woman. And I'd be like, well, that's something a sexist would say.
And that's, to be fair, it is something a sexist would say.
Yeah.
But also,
that's what I said. But I made him watch a couple of episodes. My downfall was when I made him watch the episodes, I made him watch the particularly bad ones.
Why did you do that? Why were you
because
not selective?
Because they were the ones that had come out at the time. So
which ones did you make him watch?
Praxeus.
Fuck off.
Particularly bad.
Praxeus is all right. It's got that cute gay love story in it.
But this is kind of like, is this representation these random people? Like,
yeah, no,
yeah,
that's
no,
good.
It was cute, to be honest.
It's a cute love story, but It's so forgettable.
And the storyline is like shit. It's and so Orphan 55. Yes. As well, I made him watch that.
Yeah.
And my brother was like, what the fuck
I
is
mean,
this?
That's horrendous.
And then what else did I make him watch? Obviously, he watched a bit of season one. I actually was picky about which ones I showed him in season one. So I showed him the good ones, which is the first episode. The Woman Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah,
The Woman Who Fell to Earth. Then I made him watch Rosa. Because, like, alien-wise...
I'm, like, on the fence with Rosa. But... For listeners at home, you should read... I mean, I'm sure you all already have, but you should read Elizabeth Sandifer's latest TARDIS Eruditorum essay on Rosa. It is absolutely damning about the sort of neoliberal politics of Rosa. I'll send it to you. But yes, I accept that it's like seen as one of the good ones, isn't it?
To be honest, now looking back, like obviously I picked that at the time, but now kind of looking back, I do understand some of the criticism surrounding it because it's kind of a bit like... My brother's genuine first question, and I was like, you are right, is like, why are they all just sitting there? Why this is happening?
I think that's the issue, isn't it?
And why is like Graham actively part of this like racist act?
Yeah,
like, what is going
on? I think in Chibnall's mind... That's kind of meant to be like the tragedy of it.
Yeah, but he didn't like portray it in the way that like.
Also, he like rewrote Mallory Blackman's script. I mean,
did he actually?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, she like wrote the first draft, and then he.
Interesting.
He took a red pen to it.
That's kind of classic Christian.
It really is. You told me a story.
Yeah.
Earlier on, when we were having dinner. About how Doctor Who has been with you in some key moments in your life. I would like you to do the story about the mug.
Oh, I can do that.
And then I'd like you to do the other story that you told me.
Oh, guys, you have a treat on your hands. Right, so I went to university for 3 months, Uni of Lincoln, shout out. And during, like, towards the end of my time at university, I was living in squalor, right? So I just like didn't wash my mug. I thought I'd washed it. That's kind of a lie. Mentally, I kind of knew I hadn't washed it.
And Lily actually means mug, like receptacle you drink from. They don't mean their face when they say wash their mug.
Yeah. I mean like a cup. And it was a TARDIS mug, right? It's always with me, Doctor Who. And I was starting to make a cup of tea. So
was it cuboid or was it round with just TARDIS print on it?
Round with TARDIS print on it. So I had no excuse.
Okay.
And it was white at the bottom. I genuinely had no excuse.
Fine.
Anyway, so I start making this tea. I haven't really looked at the bottom. I make the tea. I'm like, woohoo. Start drinking the tea. Get to like the bottom. And right at the bottom, you know, like where you've got like the last bit of tea.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think this mug could be severely moldy. Like, really moldy. Like, in the most...
Like, you're talking like... We're talking like chunks of mold.
We're talking like green. Like, green mold. We're talking like complete and utter mold central.
Wow.
And I was like, that's interesting. Anyway, didn't really think much about it. Was like, I'm just going to lay on my bed.
Yeah.
Classic me.
I mean, what do you do in that situation? I guess you could, like, make yourself be sick, but it seems kind of extreme over a bit of mold.
I was kind of like, I'll just brush my teeth.
Yeah, that's what I would do, I think.
Yeah.
Pour it away, brush my teeth, wash the mug.
And just be like, okay.
Try and forget about it.
Yeah, and just be like, that was gross.
Yeah.
It'd be a great story to tell on a podcast. So then I was like, okay, whatever. Started to feel itching up my neck. And I was like,
okay.
Right. That's not normal. Looked at my neck. There was like a rash all down my neck.
Right.
Like, what the actual fuck is going on?
Yeah.
I then was like, try and connect the dots of like what is going on. Remembered I had a severe penicillin allergy and was like, oh.
You Alexander Fleming yourself.
I Alexander Fleming myself. And the problem is, right? People don't take you seriously when you call for medical attention so that you've drank out of a Doctor Who mug with mould. Like, they just don't.
Surely you didn't mention that, oh, by the way, it's a TARDIS mug on the phone.
Yeah, I did. No, I wanted to give them the whole scenario. I was like, listen, I was using this mug, TARDIS mug.
It was bigger on the inside, so I didn't notice the mold.
And then, like, the thing is, afterwards, people were like, just chuck the mug out.
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
No.
And then I did, because, like, when I came home from uni, my mum would just, like, absolutely not take the mug home. But okay. I was, like, calling all of these, like, I called NHS 111, obviously, because I'm
I loved it, like, this mug now has, like, a reputation in your family as, like, the mug. The mug that made you.
Well, we've, like, not been allowed. Well, not like we've not been allowed, but I haven't bought a Doctor Who mug since.
Okay,
because
right.
Because I'm, like, I love the Doctor Who mug. I love the TARDIS mug. I love the whole situation.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's a bad omen.
Sure, sure.
For like mold.
Yeah.
Just like mold spores.
I don't know if I have a Doctor Who. To be honest, I don't drink tea and coffee really.
Really?
So I don't have much use for a mug. But I think the three or four mugs I have in the cupboard are as follows. One is a really tall mug with loads of facts about the solar system on it.
Yes.
All over it and inside the mug and inside the handle of the mug everywhere.
Oh, nice.
One of them, I regret to say, does have a photograph of Matty Healy on it.
Oh, yeah.
Off of the 1975. One of them is a picture of my friend Kath, who has been on this podcast before, standing next to a giant photograph of an egg.
Oh.
And then it says, once you go egg, you never go beg. And then the last mug I have is it is a list of all of the key destinations on the 192 bus route in Manchester.
That's very specific.
Yeah, it's a if you're any Mancunians listening will know the 192. It's a notorious bus.
Right.
It goes from Hazel Grove to Manchester, and it's one of those buses where like. If you get on it at a certain time of night, you're going to meet some characters. Do you know what
right,
I mean?
I see what you're saying.
Sorry, I've derailed your mug story. It was sort of over.
It's sort of over. Basically, I called NHS 111 and they all laughed at me for drinking out of my cup.
Only tenuously Doctor Who related that one. The next one is about another, maybe more significant moment in your life.
I would argue... Probably. Yeah, I mean, like, okay. maybe equal in terms of, like, the mark that the mold left in my life.
Sure. Okay.
But I would say maybe this is slightly more impactful. I lost my virginity to Vincent and the Doctor.
Right. When you say to Vincent and the Doctor, I want you to make it really clear to the listeners at home that you, you weren't getting off to Vincent and the Doctor.
No.
It happened to be
like
on in the room.
That was like in the background. Something.
So at what point in Vincent and the Doctor do you start shagging? Do you remember?
Ooh. Like midway through-ish?
Okay.
Like he was sad, but like, but like that's the whole episode. It might have been actually, might have been the moment where Amy has all the sunflowers. That's saying to me, I think that's when it was.
Okay. Wow.
Mm.
It's like of all the Doctor Who episodes to be playing while you're having sex, it's not up there with the best, is it?
No. I mean to be honest, it has tarnished that episode for
me. It's not a sexy piece of media that. It's amazing,
it's
but it's not.
It's a beautiful, that's the thing, right?
It's beautiful.
Such a beautiful piece of television.
It isn't sexy.
My disgusting self
ruined
that for myself forever.
What is the sexiest episode of Doctor Who then? The one you'd most like to be playing in the room?
That's actually a very good question. I would... Ooh. Okay, so... What is... Like, the first thing that immediately came to my head...
Right.
...was New York, that episode where they're with Rose Tyler, Cassandra...
New Earth? Oh.
Yeah.
You're thinking about Billy Piper's push-up bra, aren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Because that had, like, a huge impact on me as a child.
Billy
like.
Piper in general. So I... Occasionally on my Instagram stories, for those who follow me, I do a feature called Hot or Not.
Right.
Where it is either fictional characters or famous people or whatever that I think are hot. And then I get my followers
like,
to say, are they
or
hot or are they not? Right. And one of the things I posted recently was this video
that was incredibly formative for me sexually. That was, it's Billy Piper on the Jonathan Ross show in like 2010, talking about whether David Tennant or Matt Smith is the better kisser, and she sort of licks her top teeth. Oh, whoa, this is so tawdry, and I don't usually get into this kind of thing on the podcast, but woof. And the amount of, when I was, maybe I shouldn't say this, my dad listens. When I was younger than I should have been, I did a lot of sniffing around the web for videos, clips from ITV2's Secret Diary of a Call Girl.
Oh, that's so fair.
That is so fair.
I mean, like, my brother, I knew that show existed because I knew Matt Smith was in it.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah.
I didn't really know anything about it. Like,
well,
because
you would have been really young.
Yeah,
surely.
Like, I had no idea what was going on in that show. But recently, it's funny you say this, my brother was like, have you seen this show that Billy Piper's in? And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, oh my God.
Crikey.
But the thing is, do you know what's really funny? So, like, what Billy Piper is for you.
Yes.
That was like the era for me where that was like a thing, was like Karen Gillan.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Karen Gillan for me wasn't formative in the same way because I was, you know, I was a little bit older. I already knew about the birds and the bees.
Yeah.
But I get it.
I actively remember, when was it? I was 9. I actively remember seeing that first episode where she's in the Kissogram outfit.
Yeah, we're wowing and bowing.
And I actively remember in my head thinking to myself, I'm a lesbian. Like, I'm not even lying. Like, I actively remember thinking to myself, I'm a lesbian. And then being like, put it to the back of your head. But that's the innate reaction. Karen Gillan.
That's so iconic. She's so cool as well.
As like a person.
She seems really cool as a person.
Like...
What did you think of buzz cut era Karen Gillan?
Listen, I respect it. I've had some bad haircuts.
Yeah.
Just swipe up to my Instagram. You can see my horrific haircuts. Right now, actually, she's looking quite good. But there's been times where we've been in the dark ages. Like my poor girlfriend.
Yeah.
She's had to put up with some quite drastic decisions on my part.
I mean, I don't mean to be rude. But you're saying this as somebody who has a mullet in the present day.
Yes.
I understand they're in fashion again, and I think it's very cool.
Yes.
But what could be more drastic than the mullet?
So, okay, this is no hate to my barber, because he just did what
sure,
I agreed to.
Okay.
Right? I love Alfie, great guy, beautiful guy. He is my mullet man, right?
Right.
Has, like, saved my mullet. I had a micro fringe. I had a micro fringe about like 9 months ago.
Wow.
It was like so bad. My girlfriend actually said that I looked like a mixture of Rod Stewart and Shirley Carter from EastEnders.
Blimey. It's not a good mixture, that is it?
It's not like something you want to be told.
Well, you look cool now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it was a dark age, but I learned from it.
You've got that sort of 80s hair rock vibe.
That's the kind of like vibe I'm going for, like sort of
like what's he called, Steve from Stranger Things.
Yes, that's what you're giving. That's the sort of like vibe I'm going for. Like, I'm actually going to my barber tomorrow. I'm gonna get my sides reshaved.
Okay, cool.
Because you gotta keep the side shaver.
Yeah. Otherwise it's not a mullet anymore.
Yeah, but my girlfriend has been through some dark times with me.
Well, what a trooper.
I know. She was actually saying that it was like a perseverance, but she knew what the vision could be. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Which doctor has the best hair?
I mean, for the day, for the time, you would have said David Tennant.
Like, for the time?
For the time.
But I mean, and this, we've been over this on Galactic Yo-Yo again and again and again. Bad decision to do his hair like that again the second time around.
And like the sideburns coming back. I'm like,
it was all a bit.
Or actually, are you talking about Day of the Doctor? Or are you
talking,
about
the 14th Doctor?
Right. Bad idea. Terrible
idea.
But also
idea.
Even worse idea in Day of the Doctor.
Day of the Doctor, weird. Because also it doesn't really, like, Why did he decide to do his hair flat for like one day?
Why was his fringe like that?
It was weird.
What was going on? But also recently, so listen, I thought 14th Dr. David, great. I thought it was great. I loved it.
Oh, I thought he was fucking sexy as well.
He was great.
I never fancied David Tennant the first time around, but now he's a little bit older and he's a little bit...
Is that like...
He's like a little bit DILF now.
That's kind of how I feel about Catherine Tate.
Catherine Tate hasn't changed a bit, though.
No, she doesn't, but I felt like that the original time.
Oh, right, okay. MILF.
But like, the hair this time around... You should have just come up with something a bit different. Like, the sideburns and all that, I wasn't hitting in the same way.
Yeah, I just feel like they could have gone for a bit of a spiky thing, just smaller. It was like,
I don't know how to explain it, but it was, like, manufactured. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, it was too much.
Like, with the other one, it's kind of like, spiky, that's how it is. But this time it felt...
He looked like a man wearing a David Tennant wig.
Yes, or, like, in cosplay.
Exactly.
And, like, he kind of... It, like, was spiky, but not spiky in the same way. Like, it wasn't the same angle. It didn't go in the same way.
This is the second extended discussion I've had about this spiky hair on the podcast. Best hair. Tom Baker's got fucking good hair.
He does have some very good hair. And, like, the hair has held up as well.
It's held up. Chris Eccleston, you can never go wrong with a buzz cut.
No. And also, there are some pictures of him with, like, curtains where he looks... very nice as well.
Oh, from earlier in his career.
Yeah, he looked very nice.
In
also,
the movie Shallow Grave, his hair looks like that.
Peter Capaldi's hair.
Fuck, yes, that's so the answer. Peter Capaldi's hair, late era Capaldi. When his hair inexplicably grows by like 2 inches between...
And he's got a beautiful head of hair.
Between The Doctor Falls and Twice Upon a Time.
Yeah, and all of a sudden his hair is just like really long out of nowhere.
It's fucking
like,
incredible. But like, I can see why the continuity person was like... No, like you're slaying too hard with this hair.
That's what I mean. Like,
you know, it just looked amazing.
It looks incredible. Like, you look at early Capaldi era Capaldi, and he's cool. The hair's
all right. It's a bit buzzy. It's like a weird length though, where it looks like a bit of an overgrown buzz cut.
It kind of reminds me of, you know, like little kids in primary school.
Yeah.
Where they just get like primary school little boys.
The primary school cut.
And they just like...
The number three.
They like shave it off, but they have like a bit of a fringe.
Yeah.
That's the vibe
it was
giving.
It's a primary school boy haircut.
Yeah.
You're so right.
And like not in a nasty way.
No.
But it's just how it was.
Whereas at the end of his era, it's giving... If we're going to stick with schoolboys, it's giving... Rupert Grint in the Goblet of Fire.
Yes. Like Shaggy, grown out, mm-hmm. like doesn't care, grunge sort of vibe. We love it. I would say late era Capaldi is the best hair.
The best hair.
I would also argue Matt Smith.
It's dated more though.
It is dated. And I have a very specific time point of when I'm referring to, which is late era.
When it's a bit tidier,
it's like for the era, it's got like the quiff. I actually think
I liked it better. You know, when I like Matt Smith's hair is in before they had him cut it in The Time of Angels, which is the first episode they shot, and his hair is a bit longer. And then they decided they wanted his hair a little tidier, so they cut it. And then they shot the, you know, the scene where Amy like jumps him and snogs him at the end.
Yeah.
That is filmed on a separate occasion. So you see him go into the TARDIS with this long hair and come out and it's all tidied up.
That would make
sense.
It's
a real continuity error.
Like logistically. Because obviously I assume they would film the Ledworth scenes separately.
Yeah, completely different location. Yeah. I think they probably shot it with 11th hour.
That would make the most sense because that's the most time they were in Ledworth again.
But I liked it before. Sorry, costume designer from Series 5, who is called... What is that guy's name? It's the same guy who did Whitaker. Never mind. We're going to move on. What's he called, that guy?
I don't know, but it's the guy that put, like, the rainbow in the coat and all of that stuff.
Ray something?
Ray. I don't know. His name is definitely Ray.
Okay. I'm going to have some self-control and not look that up, which is something I, like, do too often on the podcast, is start Googling things.
Okay, I brought you here today to talk about a couple of things. Firstly, I know you're a Doctor Who fan. Mm. I originally knew you were a Doctor Who fan because while you were doing a stand-up set and I was in the audience, I saw your Doctor Who tattoo. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about your Doctor Who tattoo? Why did you get it? What made you decide to get it?
Okay, so here's the thing. All of my, like most of my tattoos are not necessarily meaningful, but they are all some kind of thing that I enjoy, right?
Yeah.
So I like some other tattoos I have is like Max from Where the Wild Things Are and things like that. Right?
Sure.
So Doctor Who, obviously a pivotal part of my life. So I was like, that has to be on my arm, right?
Yeah.
Specifically, the quote that I got was, "We're all stories in the end," right? Kind of because, number one, there's like a very... So I really like the vibe of that specific scene.
Oh, same. It's one of my favourite scenes. So that's my favourite episode of Doctor Who ever.
Really?
Bang, actually, yeah. And that scene is... I mean, it's just exquisite.
The
way he delivers that speech.
And not even that, the scoring from Murray Gold. The way that you genuinely kind of do feel like a fairy tale-y kind of...
Yeah, it's the most fairy tale Doctor Who ever gets, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that bit where he's like telling her, and he's just like this old man who's sad.
It's when he goes, "A daft old man who stole a box." And then he goes, "All right."
Yeah.
He like barely says "run away." There's it's like so incredible.
Such a like... It's like such a beautiful moment. And it's like... I don't even have to explain it without sounding like cringe, but it's like such like he's just being kind, mm-hmm, like, and he mm-hmm. just loves Amy and just like wants her to be okay, and like he doesn't even really care if he's wiped out of reality. Like that's not really his main priority.
Right, exactly.
And for me, like as much as you could say like We're All Stories in the End has like a relevance to life, like obviously it does, but for me also like just generally the ambience of the scene and like the kindness that's happening,
sure.
When I think of that specific line and that specific scene, it reminds me of like warmth and kindness,
and like hearing pearls of wisdom from people that love you,
and like even the comfort of like an adult who really cares about you telling you a story when you go to sleep.
For sure.
Like, that kind of vibe. And I just, like, I knew that I wanted...
And this adult that, as you said earlier, when you were growing up, was a person that you were like, this person would care about me no matter what.
Exactly. And, like, I've not met him. But, like, I knew that, like, if he was real, like...
For sure.
He would think I was sick. Like, he'd think I was great. But also as well, funny thing about my tattoo relating to your Matty Healy obsession is the font of this tattoo is the same
it's
font.
It's the same as... And it's in the same location.
And it's in the same location.
It's like... His says, like, bad messages.
Something, great bad situations.
Yeah,
I think,
something like that. Yeah.
But, like, so... I want to make it clear, and it wasn't necessarily because I was copying him, but I liked the aesthetic of the...
Right, so it is kind of inspired by Healy.
It is, kind of. Wow. I saw like the photo of his tattoos, and I was like, that would kind of look cool if I had that.
His most cringe tattoo is he's got the postcode for Alderley Edge.
Where is that?
So Alderley Edge is where Matty Healy grew up. It is in Cheshire. It's like just outside of Manchester,
right.
But it's like an incredibly posh area.
I was about to say that because Cheshire, from my like limited knowledge of that side of the country,
most of Cheshire is like quite posh.
It's like footballers and footballers' wives.
And Alderley Edge in particular is home to a lot of...
And he has that tattooed on him.
Yes, and he has that as if it's like, you know,
edgy. Yeah,
You know, like SE5 or whatever.
But it's like getting like, I don't know, W2 tattooed on you.
Literally. It's so funny. I mean, I choose to believe it's ironic, but it's probably not.
It's definitely not.
I actually know somebody else who has We're All Stories in the End tattooed on her. Friend of the podcast, Kezia Newson, who's been on this
in the same
a few times.
Sort of font?
No, it's actually totally different. It's on her arm, but it's like all one line, like down
oh,
the
oh, I know what you mean, kind of like
of
across
arm,
here,
and it's
yeah.
like a little more cursive.
Right, I get what you mean.
But yes, and was that like early in your? Because you've got quite a few tattoos.
I have.
You?
Yeah, I think if I'm remembering correctly, I have. Hang on a second.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Yeah, I've got 6.
Okay, so was this like early on in your tattoo career or later on?
Mid, I would say. So mid. Where the Wild Things Are
the
tattoo.
The tattoo, importantly, is not mid.
It's great. It's yeah. great, guys. But the first tattoo I ever got was the Where the Wild Things Are one.
Right.
These are... So I had 2 tattoos done the same day. First tattoo I'd done in that day was this one, and then I got a Lisa Simpson tattoo.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so
it's interesting yeah. that yeah, 3 of your tattoos there are kind of things from childhood,
yes.
and I relate to that in terms of so my first tattoo was my Doctor Who tattoo,
right?
Which is from I got it done in 2018, and it is the TARDIS as drawn by Russell T Davies.
That's sick.
And I actually showed him the tattoo at like a book signing years ago. And he was like, does that mean I own your arm now? But yeah, but that I kind of, you know, I'd not had a tattoo before.
But I love that because it's not like the other TARDIS tattoos you see. Either.
Right. Well, I'll get onto that in a minute. But I thought, I'm never going to stop. Even if I like... go off Doctor Who as I get older, I'm never gonna like regret it, touch wood,
or forget that experience or the impact that it had on you.
Exactly. Yeah, so a few of my tattoos are like that. So I got another one up here of my favorite pizza takeaway from when I was a kid.
Really?
I just feel like I'm never gonna...
That's like so beautiful though, like such a beautiful form of nostalgia.
It's like about being nostalgic, I guess. But yes, you're right, the other TARDIS tattoos I've seen, and you know, if my listeners have them, your tattoos are your tattoos, yeah. baby girl. Like, don't, you know, don't
individual
listen to
experience.
What I have to say, literally. But I think if I'd got this tattoo the TARDIS tattoo a few years before that, so if I got it, like, while I was at uni or whatever, I'd have got it in full colour 3D.
Yeah, and I get what you mean.
I don't know. I think it's a little tacky.
I agree.
Yeah.
But
I'm not opposed to... I don't have any colour tattoos.
Neither do
I'm
I.
Not I'm not opposed to colour, but I think... Yeah, I'm glad
work.
I didn't do it that way.
Yeah, for me, like, all of my tattoos are, like, black line work.
Yeah.
And I think I love what you've done with the TARDIS you've got because it's kind of different from the other ones you see.
For
I was
sure.
very conscious because I knew, like, when I started getting tattoos,
yeah,
there was going to be a Doctor Who tattoo.
For sure.
Like, I knew it was going to happen. I didn't necessarily know immediately. Like, part of the reason why I got the Wild Things Are tattoo first is because I knew immediately I was just going to get the picture of Max from Where the Wild Things Are. So I knew I was going to get that. But with the Doctor Who one, I wanted to make sure that, like, it was as arsehole as you... This sounds arsehole-y, but, like, I wanted to make sure that it, like, wasn't, like, other people's. Or, like, it's, like... Oh, I didn't mean it like that, but, like...
Okay, listeners. Lily thinks all your Doctor Who tattoos are shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. No, I just wanted to make sure that it was like not so basically,
especially you, Mikey Snooze, if you're listening,
I don't know who that is. sending all my love to you. But like, I wanted to make sure that it like wasn't something you could find on Pinterest, basically.
Right, exactly. I kind of feel like that about all my tattoos, like,
yeah,
some of them are flash, so like inevitably like other people
There's
have similar
be,
things
yeah,
but
yeah.
it, you know, yeah. But so Mikey Snooze is a Doctor Who friend of mine, who I don't see enough of, actually, but he is the guy who runs the Quiz of Rassilon, which Ooh. Is like a Doctor Who quiz that happens every so often. I think there's another one at the BFI at the start of Feb. That might have already happened. I don't know when this is going out. but he has like patchwork sleeves and stuff. But
yeah.
he's got from the same illustration book, he's got the Russell T Davies Dalek.
Right.
And then he's got like a kind of realistic, you know, Martha Smith?
Yeah, yeah.
I think Martha Smith did it. And it's a tattoo of the like 60s TARDIS console.
Ooh!
But it's like really nicely done.
That actually sounds
It's really
sick.
Cool. All of Mikey's tattoos are cool. So yeah, I think maybe he was even looking at him and seeing his tattoos and thinking, oh, I can get a Doctor Who tattoo and it not be completely cringe.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, no hate, all love. But I wanted to make sure that, like, I didn't look at him and be like, cringe. Like,
literally. I mean, no one wants to think about any of their tattoos, do they?
No. And also, that's partially... it's partially why I made sure that I got like a quote and it was in a font that other people weren't going to get it.
For sure.
Because like, I didn't feel like necessarily people were going to see that and be like, oh, I'm going to get it in that specific font. And that was the only thing I could really find that font on was Matt Healy's fucking arm. So I was like, I'll get that because no one else is going to have that tattoo.
Yeah,
is going to have it in that font or in that place. So that's kind of why I wanted to do it, not to be like, I'm not like other people, like, ah, I'm so individual, but like.
So I'm going to ask you a bit of a scary question.
Go for it.
But it also applies to me.
Right.
Maybe a bit less so, though, to be honest.
Okay.
So my tattoo is something drawn by Russell T Davies.
Mm.
Your tattoo is something written by Stephen Moffat.
Yes.
What are we going to do when those two men get cancelled?
Such a good question.
Do you ever think about that?
I do. I think about that with a lot of things. So, obviously, Where the Wild Things Are, not so much, because that's a very old book. We're kind of past that boat now. But, like, say if, I don't know, Matt Groening got, like, severely cancelled for something terrible, and I've got Lisa on my arm.
I mean, he was on the Epstein plane.
That's great news.
Did you not know that?
That's incredible news.
I'm so sorry.
I am so pleased to find that information out.
so sorry I've done that to you. Lots of people contributed to The Simpsons, though, didn't they?
Exactly.
It's not just Matt Groening.
Exactly. That's kind of like a cultural moment. It's like getting Mario Toad on you. Like, you can't, you know what I mean? But, like, yeah. Or I thought about the fact that, so on my arm up here, no one can see what I'm talking about, but you can. I've got a tattoo with, like, some weird, like, animal thing. Great way to describe your own tattoo. And okay. Then below it is a lyric from an Adrianne Lenker song.
Okay, sure. From Big Thief.
Yes. So I have a lyric from her song, Not A Lot, Just Forever. And the lyric is literally, the thing that it literally says is, Not A Lot, Just Forever.
Right.
So I think about regularly, like, say if Adrianne Lenker got cancelled, like, really bad. Adrianne Lenker got cancelled really, really bad. Like, Adrianne Lenker had done something terrible. What would I do? And, like, I'm trying to think about that. I don't really know. I mean, to be honest, I think about it like this. Whether or not that person is a bad person, like, even if Moffat or Russell T Davies are terrible people,
yeah,
the thing that you enjoyed about that isn't necessarily inherently connected to, like, what they did.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
It's kind of like what we were talking about with girls earlier.
Right, exactly.
And Lena Dunham, right?
Yeah.
Questionable person, problematic person, like,
or Matty Healy, dude, like, yeah. We were talking about him as well. This is the second podcast where he's come up, but yeah, I mean, to be fair, Matty Healy's bullshit is the only thing that has put me off getting a 1975 tattoo.
And I would say that is a good idea. Do not get out of that band.
If it weren't for his bullshit, it would have happened by now. But I'm unfortunately. His bullshit exists. I do have a Haim tattoo that says Summer Girl.
Yeah.
I feel kind of confident that the Haim sisters aren't going
to
get cancelled.
I don't think they are either, to be honest. They are kind of like people that, like, you know, there's like a list of people that won't get cancelled.
Yeah.
And you're like, sure, they're not going to get cancelled. Like, Lucy Dacus isn't going to get cancelled. So I'm not ashamed, like, or worried about getting a Lucy Dacus tattoo.
But, I mean, any Hired man at the BBC.
That's what I was about to say.
Anything could happen.
The issue is with Doctor Who is it's run primarily by, like, white men in their 50s.
For sure.
So they have the probability, a higher probability, that they're either going to say something bad, have said something bad that's going to get uncovered, or done something terrible.
Doctor Who tattoos. Before we move on, tattoos have figured in Doctor Who a couple of times. In Face the Raven,
yes,
Clara gets deaded off by a tattoo.
I
love the way that Peter Capaldi says tattoo in that story. It's so great, isn't
tattoo.
It? Yeah. There's nothing else to say about that other than
I mean, tattoos, I feel like, don't... I feel like now Doctor Who is kind of more cunty with the Tudor era.
Sure.
I feel like they could be coming.
Maybe.
They could become big time.
I mean, Martha is the only companion that has a visible tattoo.
Yeah, she did have a tattoo, didn't she?
Yeah, she has like a little sort of shrub on her arm.
On her arm, yeah.
I once saw Freema Rajaman in King's Cross Station in the morning, and the way I knew it was definitely her was the little tattoo.
Really?
Also, one of the doctors had a tattoo. John Pertwee.
Really? Out of everyone?
John Pertwee had a, like, serpent tattoo.
Really?
Yeah. I think from his time in the military.
Right.
Or the Navy, maybe. And there's a scene in, I want to say, Spearhead from Space.
Where they didn't cover it up properly.
Well, no, he's in the shower. And there's it shows him, is this Spearhead from Space? Anyway, shows him.
I have watched all of Classic Who, but not for a very long time.
So they show him in the shower, and you see the tattoo. And there's all these, like, fan theories. It might even have been put in a novel by some, like, nerd. That, like, it was, it's like a mark that the Time Lords put on him when they exiled him to Earth.
I thought it was going to be that sort of vibe. Yeah. Or something like, the Master lives in his arm, or something
Shit like that. Yeah. Yeah, because John Pertwee had this random tattoo. You wouldn't think him, would you?
No, out of everyone, I thought you was going to say, like, one of the younger lot. You know what I mean? Exactly, like, yeah. Matt Smith, or, like, even Peter Capaldi. I believe that man could
I can imagine Peter Capaldi having some tattoos, maybe. Yeah, I can imagine Eccleston having, like, a little discreet Manchester B.
Yeah, or even, like, some sort of, like, political slogan somewhere.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Eat the rich, yeah. Parasite in chief in Heredia.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, we're going to move on to... I made a list, because we're both comics.
Right.
I thought it would be interesting to talk about some of the occasions that comedians, or... I'm saying comedians and comedian-adjacent people.
Comedian-adjacent people.
So people who are known for... Not necessarily stand-up comedy, but sketch comedy.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Likes of Matt Lucas.
Yeah.
I've made a list of people who've been in Doctor Who and are comedians.
Whether I remember exactly which episode is interesting, because...
Well, we'll get into it. And we're going to sort of evaluate them and decide whether it was a good idea to invite that person into Doctor Who.
There's one person I already know I'm going to have very strong feelings about. Okay. So.
These are in order of appearance. Sorry if I've missed anyone.
Okay.
Peter Kay.
Listen.
As the Absorbeloff.
Listen, Peter Kay as the Absorbeloff changed my life. What a guy.
The interesting thing about this is that he was originally up for the part of Elton.
Was he actually?
Yeah. But he turned it down because he'd recently played a similar part in Coronation Street.
Did he?
Yeah, he played like a sci-fi nerd, I guess. And he was like, I want to be the bad guy. So
he kind of slayed as the Absorbeloff.
Right?
I feel like he gets unnecessary hate.
My favourite thing is when he unveils himself as the Absorbeloff and immediately he's from Bolton.
Yes.
And before that, he's been doing, like, RP.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, he's like, I've let the accent slip.
So camp. Yeah. Tastes like chicken.
I know.
So fantastic. Some people, though, they're not a fan of that.
The episode. Yeah. Severely. I think people need to grow up.
Yeah, right.
And realize it was art. Like, you can't really move away from the fact that it was an incredible episode. Like, there are elements of that episode that I'm a little bit like, but in a good way.
It's one of my favorite episodes of all time.
I think it's aged incredibly well.
The thing people don't like is the blowjob gag. I don't hate that. I think it's funny.
Also, I didn't understand when I was a kid what they were even talking about.
Yeah, of course.
Now I get it. But, like, yeah. I don't think it's a big deal. But
it's not a big deal.
I think unnecessary hate. Great episode.
Excellent. Okay. Of course, that character was supposed to be the size of a bus, according to Will Grantham, the child who made the Absorbeloff up.
Right.
And then he went to set and he was disappointed that it was the size of Peter Kay and not the size of a bus.
I can imagine that, if you've been promised that.
He's a YouTuber now, Will Grantham.
Oh, really?
I keep thinking about getting him on the podcast and talking about Absorbeloff.
I should.
Next up, Catherine Tate.
Oh, incredible.
Obviously incredible.
Not even, like, if we're talking about, like, she is going to be the best, how like
probably this whole list.
Probably this will be the best out of this whole list, like by
and,
far.
And the thing is, when she was first, so when she's first in Doctor Who in the Runaway Bride, she plays it a bit broader. Like it's a bit more
like the Catherine Tate show,
like the Catherine Tate show, and like they pulled her in for Christmas to kind of do the Catherine
like
Tate
Kylie
show.
Yeah, like Kylie Minogue was.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so when they announced that, I remember, you know, I must have been 12 when they announced, or 11 when they announced that she was going to be in series 4.
Mm.
And I was a bit like, ugh, like, we're going to have that for a whole season?
Yeah, I can understand why you believe that.
Yeah, and then I remember her coming in for, because also, I think Catherine Tate, but I think her comedy is dog shit.
Well, her actual like stuff.
Catherine Tate show stuff.
I mean, I've not really seen that much.
It's really dreadful. But she, I mean, she's absolutely brilliant in series 4.
She's an incredible dramatic actor.
Yeah, the scene I remember like changing my mind on was the scene where she's like, "Please, can we just save someone?"
I was about to say that
the fires of Pompeii.
But even also the scene before that, when they're at the like pulley down lever thing.
Yes, you fuck yes, yeah, of course, yeah.
And like he's talking about like 20,000 people stuff, and like yes, and she like starts saying like, "Who cares about us? Like, it doesn't even matter about
for
us."
For sure.
And like takes his hand and pulls down the lever.
Incredible.
And I was like, yes, like incredible.
She's so good. She's so good in Turn Left.
Yes.
It's when she realizes she has to die.
That
goosebumps, chills.
The like dramatic acting, the emotion, also the ability to still have an episode without the Doctor and it be incredible.
So incredible. And then when she came back for another go at the end of last year.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. Those scenes in the giggle where she's in the corridors with
the Doctor.
Tennant, like,
about, but
unreal.
Also as well, like, I'm about to get deep in terms of like actual Doctor Who lore, but like, the fact that her mum is so horrible to her keeps calling her like a waste of space, basically. Like, implying she's a piece of shit. And then her having her daughter, who she just like loves unconditionally.
For sure.
Gives her like a safe space, a beautiful home. Like, Donna Noble as a character, what a character. Like, one of the best characters Doctor Who has ever had.
Also, though, in terms of Jacqueline King as Sylvia Noble, I thought it was really cool that when they brought her back last year, she'd softened a little bit.
And you could see
quite a lot, actually. Yeah. And she was
She wasn't as horrible.
She wasn't as horrible, and she was accepting of Rose,
And she was like trying her best.
She was imperfect.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. And of course her relationship with Wilf.
Yes.
Heartbreaking, incredible.
I would also, just to say on the other thing as well, I would also say that when she came back, you could almost tell that like having a grandchild had like softened her as well.
For sure. Yeah, that's so true. I hadn't even thought of that aspect.
Yeah.
And maybe seeing Donna like
lose her memory and all that.
Yeah, and settle down and kind of be happy with Sean, you know? Okay, next up we've got Mark Gatiss.
Look,
let's deal with actually we'll dump chronological order for a minute, and we'll deal with the League of Gentlemen together.
Right.
Mark Gatiss, Steve Pemberton, and Rhys Shearsmith have all appeared in Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah.
What do they bring to the table?
So, Mark Gatiss, the Lazarus Project. Listen.
You're lost for words.
Listen, there's one good scene in that.
Right.
And it's when they're at the top of the thingy. In the cathedral.
In Southwark Cathedral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except it's in Cardiff, I think.
Yeah. Apart from that, was it necessary?
That's the only time. That's not the only time. He's been in Doctor Who 3 times.
When?
So his other most significant part was in Twice Upon a Time. He plays the Brigadier's granddad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's probably his best turn in Doctor Who, actually.
I would agree, yeah.
And then the other time is he's in The Wedding of Riversong, uncredited.
What?
As the alien Viking that the Doctor plays chess with.
Oh, that's... Is that actually?
Yeah.
No way!
Yeah, it's Mark Gatiss.
I would say that's his best role.
I've forgotten the character's name. But yeah, no, that's him. And then Steve Pemberton is in Silence in the Library.
He's annoying in that.
Do you think he's annoying?
Not him as a person. But
I guess the character's annoying.
The character
right?
is annoying.
He sort of pulls it off, though.
He does, but I'm just kind of like,
yeah.
Why?
And Reese Shearsmith is in Sleep No More.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't really remember much about his character in that episode in general, to be honest.
Let's move on. this is a funny one. Okay, Journey's End.
Yeah.
Paul O'Grady.
Iconic. Iconic. That little bit where he's like, I look outside my window.
Yeah, incredible. Yes. Incredible. Rest in peace.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
We love you. But I mean, I used to go home after school every day at secondary school, watch the Paul O'Grady show.
Channel 4.
Channel 4. ITV, then it moved to Channel 4.
See, I don't remember that.
Yeah, and then I would put my head as a 15-year-old on my great-grandmother's lap and she would brush my hair for me after school. And
that's
she's
lovely.
Not with us anymore, Anna. And I have so many nice memories connected to Paul O'Grady.
Yeah. He's just was a warm presence. Do you know what I mean?
And sometimes when I'm having gender dysphoria, I ask my friends if I look like Lily Savage and they reassure me that I don't. okay. Or sometimes I'll say Dame Edna. And they'll say, Molly, shut up. Lee Evans shows up in Planet of the Dead as Malcolm.
Oh, yeah.
A bit annoying,
kind of like a soft character, like wouldn't hurt fly, just love the Doctor.
No,
like,
yeah,
you
for
can't,
sure.
You can't.
A fanboy.
Yeah.
Kind of a proto Osgood, actually.
Yes, kind of like Osgood before Osgood was Osgood, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the original kind of Doctor unit fanboy.
And
like.
maybe that's an interesting thing then. I guess we can just talk about Ingrid Oliver while we're here because she's a comedian too. Mm. But like interesting that in 2009 when they did that character, they were like, this is like a stereotypical male nerd.
Mm.
Then when they're doing it in 2013, it's like they're recognizing that girls are more into Doctor Who than ever. And
yes.
They're representing it in this sort of fangirl.
Yes, yeah. And also like the fact that then Osgood kind of, despite kind of being like the soft, nerdy fangirl.
Yeah.
Is still kind of has these great moments in comparison to, obviously Malcolm's there for like one episode, but like Osgood.
For sure.
He's kind of like this recurring character, at least for a while anyway, and has these like amazing moments and like is kind of at points a central-ish character,
yeah.
I would argue.
Do we think... Yeah, and has some dramatic moments
yes.
in contrast to Malcolm. Do we think that Osgood is a lesbian?
Yes.
We
and
do.
Is in love with Kate.
Right, except in... I think in Big Finish, but also in Stephen Moffat's amazing Day of the Doctor novelisation, she is hot for blokes.
Deeply upsetting information. Yeah.
It's upsetting, isn't it? In real life, of course, Ingrid Oliver is married to Richard Osman.
I did not know that.
Yeah. They met on when she was a guest on Richard Osman's House of Games.
Really?
A couple of years ago, and then they hit it off, and now they're married.
That's adorable.
Isn't that so nice?
That is actually adorable.
Okay, again, this is like a comedian-adjacent person.
Right.
James Corden. Look, I actually think he's good as Craig.
I do, genuinely. I sighed because... James Corden.
Yeah.
But like he is actually good. In the two episodes he's in, he's actually good.
And he has great chemistry with Matt Smith.
And also like he isn't just like annoying. Like he genuinely does have like a purpose.
Oh yeah, he's not I've just remembered somebody else who's in I just remembered another couple of comedians. Okay. Daisy Haggard plays Sophie.
Yes. Yeah.
And
she's
a comic too. And she... Wait, I had something to say about James Corden first. It's going. Oh, just that he kind of brings the lad out of the 11th Doctor a little
bit. Yeah, like the playing football.
You sort of see Matt Smith peeking through.
Yeah, like
Matt,
the football.
I think Matt Smith
is
a bit of a lad.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. I mean, I don't know. I assume you know this. Like, Matt Smith was almost like a professional footballer.
Yeah.
So, like, you could kind of tell.
Yeah.
He was, like...
When he's playing football.
It. Yeah.
Oh, God. And I do wonder sometimes. Matt Smith's my favourite Doctor. And I sometimes wonder, would we get on?
What, like, would you vibe?
Would we vibe or do? No. Just like, would I find him irksome?
Oh, would you be like, this guy, like,
yeah,
what the fuck?
Yeah. Like, so I know this guy. So Matt Smith's in a play in London right now called Enemy of the People.
Mm.
And I know a guy who is in the cast of Enemy of the People. And I'm going to go see the play next month. And I'm going to go for drinks with this cast member after. And in my head, I'm like,
he's going to be there.
What if Matt Smith tags along?
Ugh.
And I'm kind of terrified. Like,
are you terrified in like a good way?
No, I'm terrified that I would meet him and I'd find him incredibly annoying.
Okay.
I might call that out. Daisy Haggard plays Sophie, Craig's girlfriend, later wife.
Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't really have a lot to do.
No,
to be
she's
fair.
Just like love interest.
But she's brilliant in other stuff. She's great in Back to Life, if you've seen that.
I've never seen that.
Which also has Joe Martin in it.
Right.
It's really, really good.
I don't... What is that on?
That was on... I think it was on Channel 4, but you can watch it on Netflix now.
Okay. I might give it a go.
So I used to work in a coffee shop.
Right.
Last year before. And Daisy Haggard would periodically come into the coffee shop. And she kind of knew my manager from going in the shop and they would chat.
Right.
And I was always kind of keen to ingratiate myself with Daisy Haggard. And,
right.
And, you know, I'm a comedian, so I want Daisy Haggard to like me.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And one day she comes in and I'm at the till and I'm thinking I'm going to, like, do some quips for Daisy Haggard. And she goes, I'd like... maybe like a cortado-y type thing. And I went, oh, so do you mean a cortado then?
Oh, no.
I thought I was being like...
cool.
Witty and like, yeah, sharp. And she looked at me like, what's your fucking problem, bitch?
Oh,
like,
no.
I was like...
I did. When you said what you said, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, of course, that's what it sounds like. But in my head, it sounded kind of like...
ooh,
quick-witted, like, and
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she looked at me like, she gave me a death stare and then walked out. Obviously, I made her the cortado and whatever.
Oh,
anyway,
no.
Let's move on. David Walliams appears as a disgusting Tivolian.
Horrific character.
Horrific character.
Horrific.
And the Tivolian's disgusting.
Yeah. So all in all, I'll give it a zero.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Okay, we'll move on. In The Doctor, the Wizard, the Widow and the Wardrobe, Bill Bailey,
yes,
gets wasted.
Yes.
Not he doesn't get drunk. He's wasted in the role.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you agree?
I would agree. I also think that whole episode is a bit
shit. Naff. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really understand a lot of why.
Yeah. It also has like this weirdly gender essentialist vibe at the end. Yeah.
I mean, the mum from Outnumbered, Claire Skinner. Queen.
Great. Also, Alexander Armstrong shows up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Meaning that he plays two different characters in the Hooniverse, because he also voices Mr. Smith in the Sarah
Jane
Adventures.
Yeah!
And yeah, Bill Bailey shows up and doesn't really do much.
No, I vaguely remember him in it. So the fact that I vaguely remember him kind of says to me that,
yeah,
he wasn't
he's
really
Bill Bailey.
Used.
Like, you should be able to remember him.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. David Mitchell and Robert Webb play robots in Chris Chibnall's masterpiece Dinosaurs and a Spaceship.
Actually,
yeah,
that episode, right?
And what's incredible about that is is that they got David Mitchell and Robert Webb and then Chris Chibnall forgot to write any jokes for them,
and also didn't just put them as robots, like,
yeah. I mean, presumably, yeah, it's true.
I don't hate that episode because I like dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of dinosaurs.
Oh, I don't hate that one. As far as Chibnall episodes go, it's not too bad.
It's not bad. I would rate it mid.
Mm.
But I don't remember anything they said or did. Therefore,
yeah, they're not
they
funny,
can't have been
it?
That important.
Let's move on. We've discussed Ingrid Oliver already. Frank Skinner.
What episode is he in?
He is in Mummy on the Orient Express. He plays a character called Perkins, who's a sort of handyman on the Orient Express.
Yes.
Basically. And then at the end, Peter Capaldi invites Frank Skinner to travel with him.
Yes. He was okay.
Frank Skinner apparently an enormous Doctor Who fan. So that's what was great. I'm glad,
I mean,
glad that he got to live his dream.
I kind of like, I think he was fine, but I don't think he was anything particularly notable. You know what I mean?
It wasn't game changing.
No.
Okay, be careful with this one because he's a friend of the podcast. He has been on the podcast before. I'm saying that as if he's listening. He's not listening, but he is a previous guest. Rufus Hound.
Okay, right. The best performance I've ever seen in my whole life. Rufus Hound.
Rufus Hound as Sam Swift in The Girl Who Died. No, The Woman Who Lived.
Absolutely no recollection of Rufus.
He plays the rival highwayman to Maisie Williams. Oh. And Maisie Williams gives him the other immortality thing at the end.
Rufus Hound, lots of love if you're listening.
He's not listening, to be clear.
I have watched so many episodes of Doctor Who, and unfortunately, I don't remember.
Iconic. Rufus Hound's actually really good in Cucumber, if you've seen that. Anyway,
I have seen Cucumber, and he is very good in that.
Reese Smith, we discussed. Bethany Black is also in Sleep No More.
I do remember
she,
that.
She was Doctor Who's... It was the first ever transgender actor in Doctor Who, and they have her playing a genderless grunt. Which I don't love.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's an interesting...
It's an interesting choice, isn't it?
Choice yeah. to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
And she doesn't have any comedy in it, even though she's a stand-up comic.
Right.
Matt Lucas as
boo.
Nardole. Oh, really?
Boo, yeah.
I like Nardole.
I don't. I think he has moments where I'm right. like, he's okay.
Yeah.
But, like, he was just a... This isn't even me being nasty. I'm not even being horrible. Like, I'm not even... like digging him out.
Sure.
But he's just a bit like infantile at right. points, like a bit immature. I don't know if that makes
wow.
sense.
You're pissing on Matt Lucas.
Not even pissing on Matt Lucas. I mean, he does have a problematic past, but whatever.
He does have a problematic past. Just say the word.
An interesting person to put on what is a show that's meant to be aimed at kids. But yeah. There was moments where I was a bit like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
I didn't
Look,
hate him.
I think
him.
We could have had a very good series time without Nardole, but yeah. I always like to have him around.
I didn't hate him.
It is fucking crazy that Matt Lucas did blackface on BBC One in 2010 or 2011.
And he still gets hired now?
It's crazy
and like,
to
do
me.
Do you want to be in Doctor Who and be a companion? You only did blackface like 6 years ago?
And be the host of Bake Off with... Noel Fielding.
Oh, don't even.
Okay, Doc Brown and Brett Goldstein both appear in the Saranga yeah. Conundrum, and yet again,
terrible episode.
Are given no comedy by Chris Chibnall.
Yep, and I do
bullshit.
I do. Main reason why I remember this more than others is because it's a recent episode, yeah. so it's like fresher in my head. Not because I enjoyed it.
I mean, it's not. It's 6 years old now. Well, 5 years old.
That's true, but you have to remember some of these episodes like were airing like before I was sentient.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
but this, I remember this not because I enjoyed it, because it was a horrific episode and there was no good pieces of dialogue for anyone, let
yeah.
alone those two
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
So, let alone, you know. But I feel bad for Brett Goldstein because he is incredible at comedy and comedic acting.
And hot.
Yeah.
Okay. Lee Mack shows up later that season.
Yes, I do remember
in
that.
In Kablam. Okay. again, comedy adjacent. She appears in sitcoms a lot. You'll have seen her in Feel Good, no doubt.
Yes.
Charlotte Ritchie.
Oh, Queen.
Queen. Wasted a little bit in Resolution.
Why would you have Charlotte Ritchie in a Doctor Who episode and kill her off in the first 5 minutes?
That's not what happens.
Well, it's like, it feels like 5 minutes. Like it's like the startish of the episode.
She doesn't die.
But she doesn't die, but she's a host. So yeah, she's not okay, really, it's not. It's just Charlotte Ritchie in body. You might as well have just got a cardboard cutout, put a Dalek on the back of it and been like, Charlotte Ritchie's in the episode.
Oh, Lily Webber spoken. Stephen Fry. pops up in Spyfall.
Yes.
For no reason and then gets deaded off.
And then just to be like Stephen Fry's in the episode.
Yeah.
Pointless.
Lenny Henry's also in that episode and he's really good in it.
He's good, but
he's not funny in it, but he's
but his character
really
is also really annoying.
And it's a weird scene where he deads off his own mum.
Yeah. He just kills his own mum and you're kinda like, okay.
It's Chibnall going for Grimdark and it doesn't land. Yeah. James Buckley, star of The Inbetweeners, shows up in Orphan 55, does nothing.
Does nothing. Classic Chibnall era.
And then in another Inbetweener, Blake Harrison shows up. Neil from The Inbetweeners is in Flux. Yeah. No comedy.
Zero comedy. The same as...
John Bishop as Dan.
Listen, I don't hate John Bishop as Dan.
John
Bishop as Dan. Done dirty by the writing. I think... Because I assume you've seen Skins.
You know what? I actually haven't seen Skins, but I've had this conversation before with my ex-co-host, Johnny, who talked about how brilliant John Bishop was as a dad in Skins. Yeah,
he's a very good actor.
Yeah, and he acts well in Doctor Who, but the character isn't amazing.
The character isn't really developed, and the dialogue throughout the entire era is shit, so it doesn't really matter either way.
And finally, Aisling B in Eve of the Daleks.
I love her, like, as a comic, as a person. This Way Up is incredible. Like, she's great.
For sure. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, Lily. It means a lot. Have you got anything to plug to my millions of listeners? Even just your Instagram page.
My Instagram is lilyweb__. Hopefully I get...
Web with two Bs, right?
Web with two Bs. Lily with... Lily.
Excellent.
I hope to see the followers flooding in.
It could happen. Some people do listen to this. I want to be clear. I get listeners in the hundreds, not the thousands.
That's sick, though.
The odd episode tips over into 1,000.
That is very cool.
I don't predict this being one of them.
What?
Because it's usually when I've got like. Famous men on the podcast that happens.
I am the most famous of all the men.
/ Doctor Who fandom's favourite lesbian, Crystal D, who might still be my most listened episode. Anyway, people will listen to this.
Please.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. Please follow Lily on Instagram and come to their comedy gigs. Also come to my comedy gigs, which are sometimes the same comedy gigs.
They're sometimes the same comedy gigs, two for the price of one.
There you go. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have an amazing life.